Thanks, everyone, for joining us for week 5 of the Blue Bench podcast. Today, we'll break down some important bills that received hearings in the House Judiciary Committee meetings this week. We're taking a look at housing bills and yet another attack from the MTGOP lawmakers to limit access to abortion and IVF. Plus, MTGOP is hard at work with big dreams of dismantling Montana's court system as we know it. Later in the show, Shannon gets to talk to kick-ass lawyer and defender of the Montana constitutional rights that we have and former candidate for Lieutenant Governor Rafe Grable about the flurry of bills being introduced in the legislature to make the courts partisan and turn judges into full-blown politicians. Shannon, is nothing sacred anymore?
It's a fascinating time right now. Air quotes fascinating.
But first, I know we have some breaking news as of yesterday from the Senate floor yesterday afternoon. Shannon, what the heck is going on in the Senate?
Yeah, and that's the big question. What the heck is going on in the Senate? It's a lot of activity there. So we've known Senator Jason Ellsworth, former president of the Senate, has been in front of Senate Ethics Committee facing allegations of criminal official misconduct. And yesterday on the Senate floor, Minority Leader Pat Flowers expressing concern that Ellsworth would not get a fair hearing because of essentially political motivations of the Republicans. And it's retaliation because Ellsworth has been aligning with Democrats. And there have been other moderate Republicans who are aligning with Democrats, and they're blocking a lot of bills that the far right are trying to get through. And so the vote that actually passed suspended the ethics investigation and sent it over to the Department of Justice, to the Attorney General, Austin Knudsen. And there was strong opposition by the Republicans in the Senate on this move, but it passed. So in response, here's another twist to it. Senator Daniel Emmerich, who's out of Great Falls, he made a threat that he would make a motion today, Friday, to expel both Ellsworth and Flowers from the Senate. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens this afternoon. But this has all been going on the Senate floor. And they gavel in at 1 o'clock every single day of the legislative session. So it's a good time to tune in.
It sounds like real life House of Cards, you know, an episode from House of Cards. Okay. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on that and be sure to keep folks informed on the latest news with that. But I want to transition to some bills that we heard in the House Judiciary meetings this week. So there were some interesting bills that received hearings. And just to remind folks, Montana House and Senate Democrats have identified housing as a key priority for this year's legislative session. So we're going to look at a couple of those Democratic bills that came through this last week. The first one being House Bill 311, which was introduced by Representative Kelly Cordom from Bozeman. And he introduced a bill that would require property managers to return rental application fees to rental applicants if they aren't being used for legitimate purposes like credit checks. So let's roll the clip of that.
Every day, Montanans pay rental application fees but don't get the apartment. Why are they paying for a service they never receive? Big, corporate, and often out-of-state landlords are harvesting application fees for Montanans desperate to find a place to live. One extreme example that happened in Bozeman is they'll get 50 applications, award the rental to the second person in line, and pocket the other 48 application fees. And that's $50 times 48, or almost $2,400 for an hour's worth of labor. Getting a roof over your head should not be like a raffle or a lottery, requiring money with no guarantee of housing.
Shannon, this is a really interesting bill that is definitely targeting our Montana renters. What do you think of it?
I'm really glad you're highlighting this bill. Housing has been an issue. We all are well aware of that. Property taxes have skyrocketed. People are concerned. You know, all of these things we're hearing. But I heard, and when I was on the campaign trail, I heard a really interesting comment by a very brilliant woman who said, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu. And that makes me think so much of the composition of the legislature. And it's, you know, 99% of the people in the legislature are homeowners. Some of them own multiple homes. They're not renters. They're totally out of touch with, and I, you know, speak for myself too, totally out of touch of what it's like to try to come up with a $50 fee and then not get that back just to find a place. And you have to probably do that multiple times because there's so little housing. So I have to, in addition to first, last, and damage deposit, I also have to come up with hundreds of dollars for these fees that I won't get back. So it's those kinds of things that we need to really think through and help others. You know, we're serving, who are our constituents? They're not all just like us.
Right. There was a young woman who actually testified in support of the bill this last week. She comes from Missoula. She's a University of Montana student. She had some really interesting insights to add. Let's roll the clip.
This past summer, I personally applied to approximately 5 rental properties in Missoula, with application fees ranging from $25 to $50 each. As a first-time renter, I was declined for all of them, resulting in an overall cost of just $200 to just apply. Unfortunately, my experience is far from unique, as many students I've personally spoken to have faced similar challenges.
See, we often think about how challenging it is to become a first-time home buyer and how, you know, hard it is to come up with a down payment, how hard it is to qualify for a loan and pay the mortgage. But now we're seeing it very, very challenging to become a first-time renter. It's a whole different ballgame.
So there was another bill that had a hearing in the House Judicial Committee meeting this week. Unfortunately, Representative Jonathan Carlin's bill, House Bill 304, his bill was tabled this last week. That bill was a proposal to give Montana renters a fair shot at reclaiming their rental security deposits. So, Shannon, this bill was tabled. Does that mean it's dead? Will we see this bill again this session?
Yeah, it's an unknown, but if a bill is tabled, it's entirely possible to vote in committee to bring it from the table to have discussion and to take executive action on it. So it's if enough people, and here's my plug, join us for legislative action meetings Mondays at 5:30, Thursdays at noon. Go to the MontanaDemocrats.org website to find out more about that. If we put pressure on the members of that committee to pull that bill back, that could do it. That said, the rule is no bill is ever dead until we sine die. Sine die is the official end of the legislative session, because things can be brought up. And when you least suspect it.
I also wanted to bring up one other bill that received a hearing in these House Judiciary Committee meetings this week. It's actually a Republican-sponsored bill. So Laurel Republican Lee Demings, his House Bill 316 creates a constitutional referendum to be voted on in 2026 that would define a person in the Montana Constitution as, quote, all members of mankind at any stage of development, beginning at the stage of fertilization or conception, regardless of age, health, level of functioning, or condition of dependency, end quote. So this bill is problematic for numerous and obvious reasons. One, it's a flagrant assault by MTGOP to deny women the freedom to make their own private healthcare decisions. So by defining personhood as a fertilized egg or embryo, this bill could harm the lives of women with high-risk pregnancies and undermine medical decision-making for families and healthcare providers.
This bill is one of many bills that, to me, feel like they're desperate measures to try to fight something that is unstoppable, that Montanans overwhelmingly support the right for people to have authority over their own bodies, their own business, and that includes healthcare. And the CI 128 initiative that was on the ballot is a prime example of that, passed overwhelmingly, and Republicans and Democrats feel the same way about this. And we have seen, and we will continue to see, legislation that are scraps at efforts to take away that. And it's, you know, there's a part of me that's like, bless their hearts. They're, if this is the battle they want to fight, you go fight that battle. But the people have made it clear.
Yeah. And the next point I want to bring up, which is extremely important when we're talking about these personhood bills, is that these kinds of bills could also limit access to in vitro fertilization in Montana. And this is not an exaggeration. We look at what happened in Alabama just this last year. The Supreme Court in that state ruled that frozen embryos were considered people. And at that point, IVF providers in Alabama suspended treatments out of fear patients and providers could face criminal charges by undergoing IVF. So this is a big issue. I don't think it gets enough attention in the news. Just this last week in this bill's hearing, we heard some powerful testimony from a Bozeman resident. Her name is Amber Nichols, and I want to play that clip for you, Shannon.
What House Bill 316 will do is create deep uncertainty for families seeking to conceive with IVF treatment. What House Bill 316 will do is disregard the majority of Montanans who have voted time and time again for access to abortion in our state. And what House Bill 316 will do is signal to our daughters, sisters, nieces, friends, and neighbors that their health care decisions are not their own, that their legislators do not support their freedoms.
I thought that was some really powerful testimony. There were lots of other people from across the state kind of saying similar things.
That was very powerful. And I think we need to constantly remind ourselves that we don't know what it's like.
Sure.
So it's not their business.
No,
it's not their business. Gabby, I'm so excited to introduce our guest this week, Rafe Graybill. He's a Great Falls kid, and he would be the last to share that he went to Columbia for undergraduate, which is Ivy League, many of you may know. He was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, got a master's degree there, and then he went to Yale Law School. And then he's come home, and he's serving our justice system proudly. He was worked for Governor Steve Bullock as chief legal counsel. And not only that, he's got a lovely wife and three beautiful young children, and he's just as decent as they come as a human being. So we had a great conversation.
I can't wait to hear it.
Rafe, thank you so much for being on with us. We are thrilled and honored. You've been a champion for Montana with many, many different hats, including some of the things we've already discussed. But what we really want to get into today are the courts, and have a better understanding of why it feels like the judiciary branch of our government is being attacked, quite frankly. And I was a social studies teacher. I think you know that. And that balance of power that is such a constitutional foundation to make sure that the executive doesn't have too much power, the legislative branch doesn't have too much power, the judiciary is critical there. So, I'll also start with, when I was a legislator in the 2021 legislative session, it was, it felt like it was just starting there. So could you start with some of the things that happened in that session? And then, you know, we can build on the 2023 session and what's happening now.
Yeah. And I think the story of what's happening now with courts actually starts before the 2021 session. It starts when we have essentially a 50-year period or a 40-year period of a constitution in Montana that lays forth kind of the basic rules. It sets forth our most important values. It protects rights. And it says within those rules, the legislature can basically do what it wants. But if you break those rules, then there's a problem. Then you can't do it. And for many, many years in Montana, there was kind of a basic consensus around those rules and the values that those rules memorialize. And the legislature, under Democratic governors, Republican governors, different parties control in the different houses, passed a lot of laws, took the state in different directions, but never, you know, or rarely got close to breaking those basic rules. And that was a consensus that worked. And very few laws were ever sort of, you know, went through the process, both houses, signed by the governor. There's a lot of checks and balances there. So very few laws get passed that are ultimately found to be unconstitutional, that break those rules. And we go years and years in Montana with very few of these cases happening. Now, fast forward to 2021, and for the first time in 16 years in Montana, you've got one political party that controls all of the legislature and the governor's office. And the governor doesn't show really any inclination to take a critical eye towards what, you know, what these rules mean and what his party is doing in the legislature and veto stuff. So there's a whole series of bills in 2021 all of a sudden that start making the way through the process. The legislature's own lawyers, as you probably remember, raise their hand and say, hold on, these appear to be, you know, pretty clearly unconstitutional. You're going to have problems if you pass these. Now, in the prior 16 years or even longer, those would usually get vetoed or they would die in the process because folks would know they'd get vetoed. But in 2021, all these bills get passed. They come out and a lot of them, you know, no surprise, end up getting challenged in the courts, which is where you go. And they're not challenged for fun. They're not challenged as a manner of sort of political sport or score settling. The people I represent, these laws violate their fundamental constitutional rights. For example, I represent Planned Parenthood. A lot of these laws say that if Planned Parenthood healthcare providers give necessary healthcare, they're felons. They should go to prison, right? So it's a big deal for folks who have to bring these cases. Well, you know, the legislature's lawyers, turns out, were right on a lot of these laws. And when the courts looked at them in a really neutral way, they violated core constitutional protections. There weren't that many of these cases, maybe, you know, a couple dozen across the two sessions. But it's way more than there were before. And the core problem is there was some failure in the checks and balances in the legislature or the governor's office that hadn't been the case before. And so to fast forward to where you started with your question, why the attack on courts? Okay, so you pass these bills, they get declared unconstitutional. We can talk about those cases. I think most of them were pretty conservative decisions, little c conservative, you know, applying the plain text of the Constitution in a really neutral way. Not a lot of favors being granted by judges out there. These are conservative cases. So then the legislature gets to decide how it's going to react. And it has two choices. It's a fork in the road, if you will. One choice is to go back to what they've done before and follow the rules, or the governor veto bills that don't follow the rules and kind of get back to this consensus. Instead, they screech to the right and they say, well, we don't really care about the basic rules in the Constitution. We're going to keep passing these laws, and instead we're going to attack the ref. And that's where we are today. There's this really concerted effort to go after the courts because basically the courts have applied the law faithfully and neutrally. It's not activism. It's really neutral stuff. The legislature was warned. The governor was warned. And they've chosen to play the ref instead of, you know, there's an easy solution here that saves taxpayers a lot of money. Don't pass these laws.
Yeah, I'll share that as a rookie senator that session, I had an earnest conversation with a committee chair that I was on. And I said, you know, just help me understand why we would be passing these bills that we know are unconstitutional. And he in earnest said, he was sweet, but he was like, oh, we don't worry about that. As though he was kind of trying to train me. We don't worry about that. We just let the courts decide that. And
an oath. You have to worry about that. You put your hand on the Bible and take an oath.
I know, to upstand the Constitution. It's
the oath.
It's so simple. It's just so simple. So I did want to ask about you mentioned the cost to taxpayers, and I know it's impossible to put a number to that, but I think it's important for us to recognize. What do you say about that?
I mean, I think there's a tremendous cost to taxpayers. For one, you've got a large number of attorneys at the Department of Justice who are defending lawsuits they should not have to defend, especially where there's, you know, the AG's job is to defend laws the legislature passes. But if the legislature, you know, in the case you just mentioned, just says we don't care and passes things that are obvious unconstitutional, you know, that creates expenses the Department of Justice that they shouldn't have to expend. More and more, we're seeing outside law firms hired. There was a huge amount of money given to a firm in Washington, D.C. to defend the TikTok ban, which the attorney general sort of admitted was unconstitutional as it was being passed. And then we pay $500,000 to this D.C.-based law firm to defend it. I think they budgeted several million additional dollars in 2023 to deal with these cases. And that's just sort of the government side of things. They got to pay expert witnesses. They got to pay deposition costs. Then, you know, in a lot of cases now, if the government passes something it knows is unconstitutional and defends it, even though it knows it's unconstitutional, in limited circumstances, the people bringing the case can recover their costs of bringing the case. Now, this hasn't happened very often. I think there's sort of a broader interest in this by the legislature than is justified, because it's actually pretty rare. But that could create additional financial liability for the state. And so, you know, it's not a cost-free exercise. And the other thing I want to point out in terms of costs, it is a huge tax on the people who are affected by these laws, right? I think, again, there's this sense that we pass the laws, it's sort of the court's job. Remember, the cases are brought by people that are directly impacted by them. Again, I think about my clients. These are people that don't want to be in court. They don't. It's not fun to be in a lawsuit. It's not fun to sit down and have a government lawyer put you under oath and ask you personal questions about your life. It's horrible. It's a horrible process. And they spend huge amounts of time, money, they create vulnerabilities for themselves in order to defend their constitutional rights. And these are rights that are supposed to be secured by the law. You have to go to court to enforce them. But I think it would really upset a lot of my clients to hear what you just said, that the legislature says, oh, we don't really care about that. You know, and it's easy. You go home after 90 days. It was really fun in Helena to, you know, try out some new restaurants and pass some laws. But when you leave, there are people, real people, who are affected by this. And the only option they have to protect themselves and protect their rights is to go to court. And again, they have been successful in a number of these cases, not all of them, but in many, many of these cases. And the response by the legislature is not to say, oops, we screwed up, which I think would be the adult responsible thing to do, take responsibility for your mistakes. Instead, they say, well, let's attack the courts. It must be a partisan hoax. It must be, you know, there must be something going on that they don't like us. And no, if you look at these decisions in detail, I've spent a lot of time close to these cases. These are cases that are pretty, you know, I don't take cases that are real flyers. I won't take a case if I think that the people asking me to bring in are wrong. I take a case if I think that they're pretty clearly right and that they should win and that something deeply unfair has happened to them. And, you know, the courts have looked at these and they... Unfortunately, the legislature gave them a lot of source material where the answer was pretty darn clear. You know, and you know, there's a lot of attacks on judges personally, which I really despise because I think that undermines the whole system of rule of law that we have. But people attack judges and say, oh, they're, you know, they're Democrat judges. And a lot of these folks that they're shooting at were Republicans in their private lives before they became judges. It's not a partisan thing, but I think that there's kind of this cynical strategy of, you know, anything we, the legislature, don't like must be partisan. And that's really kind of rejecting some of the basic terms of the rule of law that we've agreed on for hundreds of years in this country because they want a little bit more power during those 90 days in Helena.
So, Rafe, tell us about what can regular, normal citizens who are very busy, as you are with, you know, three kids trying to get to the basketball game or the whatever it is you have going on with your kids, your age, their age. What can people do to be a part of the change to make to help us build hope?
Couple things. I mean, I think one, while the session is here, while the legislative session is here, which is when we're recording this, I really think it does make a difference to reach out to your legislator. There's a lot of bills that attack the judicial process. And I think that it might be easy for a legislator to think, well, this is kind of a Helena problem. This is kind of a capital problem. But reaching out and saying, you know, I don't want my courts politicized. I actually want less politics in my life, I think is a powerful message. And I think it adds up when you reach out to your legislator. That's one. And two, I think people should really seriously consider running for local offices and for state legislative offices. We are very lucky to live in a state where there's no party machine that dictates whether you can run or not. And I think to the extent that folks who share our values are going to build back power in Montana and fight for working people in this state, it's going to start with city council seats. It's going to start with state legislative seats. Though the statewide results last November were disappointing, I would tell people thinking about running, you know, don't let that cloud your judgment of what went on in Montana too much. In those races, like the one I was in, like the one you were in, yeah, I think partisanship kind of got ahead of the individual issues, and it became very hard to communicate above the partisan fray. But for folks who ran for legislative seats, we did much better. I mean, I think that when you knock on it, and I'm originally from Great Falls, Jane Weber in Great Falls flipped a seat back for Democrats, not by waving a blue flag or a red flag, but by meeting enough people and connecting with enough people and talking about shared values and shared experiences. And that's something that is still very attainable in local seats and legislative seats. And again, there's glimmers of hope that our values are shared by a lot of people out there. And I think, yeah, if you can't get your legislator to budge, run against them. That's the Montana way.
That's right. That's great. Rafe, it was great to see you. It's been a little while. And thank you so much for fighting the good fight for Montanans. Really appreciate you being on the podcast.
You as well. Thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
See ya.